Chapter 68. Orientation. I'd been roaming the United Kingdom for 6 months. My purpose for being here was twofold. Firstly, I wanted to participate in the required number of Findhorn Foundation programs that would lead me to the big one, orientation, due to start at the end of October 1984. Afterwards, I hoped to be invited to become a foundation member. Secondly, between programs, I wandered the country learning about my ancestors, meeting interesting people, and discovering pockets of fascinating history, in unexpected places. By the end of my most recent Outer Hebridean adventure, I was really looking forward to returning to Cluny Hill College. One of Cluny's main drawcards was the plentiful supply of imaginative vegetarian food, served twice a day. Whilst on the road, it was often difficult to find meatless tucker, other than a chip butty, the mainstay of the British diet, and available everywhere. A chip butty consists of fried potato chips, doused in sauce, and served between two pieces of buttered white bread. At last, the big day arrived, the start of the winter orientation program. We orienteers gathered at the park in readiness for our first meeting that afternoon. But that very day, I had another unmissable commitment, to attend the monthly meeting of the Inverness Spinners and Weavers. I'd recently become a member, because I was determined to keep a firm foothold in the broader Scots community whilst living at the foundation. My professional interest in textiles and textile skills made this group the perfect fit. On Saturday morning, I hitched a ride to Inverness, and after the meeting, returned to the park, just in time to make it to the orientation starting line. I was one of 22 eager starters from the United Kingdom, the United States, Germany, Switzerland, Belgium, Holland, and New Zealand, plus another Australian from Canberra. Our focalizers were long-time foundation members, who'd give us their view of community life, and answer our never-ending stream of questions. The program was nicely paced, and provided a warts and all overview of numerous, fascinating aspects of the foundation's development. For me, a highlight of the program was revisiting AirAid. A group of foundation members were the custodians of this island for 11 months of the year. We also spent a day on Iona, and whilst we were there, we visited Tray Barn, the foundation's retreat house, not far from the abbey. I was already familiar with the area, because I'd spent 6 weeks on AirAid over summer, during which time I'd hiked all over both islands that were steeped in centuries of history. But mid-December on AirAid was a very different proposition, as it was now much colder, made worse by the strong westerly winds blowing in off the Atlantic. Thankfully, the stone cottages had peat fires to keep us warm and dry. On our return to Cluny, for the last week of orientation, we were given the opportunity to play the game of transformation. This board game, played in teams over 4 days, was devised by two foundation members. For me, this was yet another high point of the program. But those of us who'd not played before were on edge, because the game was headlined as a life-changing experience. To prepare, we were asked to find a support person. Alan, one of the maintenance crew, offered his services. He was an old hand, having played many times, and was able to help me clarify my game objectives. We saw a lot of each other during the game, and after, because I'd moved back to Cluny, where most of us, who'd been given the green light for membership, would be living. The foundation prides itself in offering a safe space for members to explore different ways to relate. Some tried celibacy, some same-sex relationships, and in my case, a relationship with a hard man, 10 years my junior, from tough town Glasgow. He described his life before Findhorn as straddling the thin blue line, first dabbling in drugs, and then joining the Glasgow police. He drank alcohol whenever he could, smoked a lot, and didn't bathe often. Whereas by contrast, I was a reformed drinker and smoker, who meditated regularly and, draped in a Miss Goody Two-Shoes mantle, aspired to save the world. This man, as I was to discover, represented my unacknowledged shadow side. Work department-wise, I had a rocky start. The Clooney Kitchen was my first placement, but it proved to be a stretch, as I'd little in the way of the catering experience needed to make food for 150 hungry people each shift. Before long, my shortcomings became evident, and I was offered the job of focalizing the Clooney Laundry instead. Hurrah! Salvation! I now had a warm place to work, thanks to the two oversized clothes dryers in use much of the time, plus a never-ending supply of textiles to play with. This was my idea of heaven. As laundry focalizer, my role was to wash, dry and fold the towels, pillow slips and sheets needed to remake Clooney's 100 guest beds each Saturday morning, in readiness for the next intake of guests. Members used the laundry out of hours. Once I had the laundry running smoothly, I could see it was in need of a good clean, so I suggested blitzing the space. With the full support of the Clooney House Care team, I began planning the spruce up. A group of willing guests spent a couple of days systematically scrubbing down the laundry walls and ceiling, before painting them bright white. Next, I prepped and painted the concrete floor with a super durable ferrous red paving paint, before closing the laundry for a day to let the paint dry hard. Now renovated, it was time for the final touch, the laundry artwork. From the exposed pipes along one wall, I hung rectangular sheets of recycled colored gel at different heights. For my effort, there was an unexpected bonus. I'd inadvertently created a kinetic installation, because the warm air from the dryers gently rotated the dangling gels. When I wasn't in the Clooney laundry, or doing another shift somewhere else, I was mostly with Alan. At the outset, I found the relationship exciting, and his taste in music was eclectic. As our relationship deepened, much to my surprise, and to the horror of some in our circle, we discussed having children. Up until this time, I discounted the possibility of parenting in all of my previous long-term relationships. The reason? I considered my succession of male partners were unsuitable co-parenting material. I saw raising children as a two-person commitment. But I sensed they were likely to bail out when the going got tough, either emotionally or financially or both. The litmus test for me was looking across my circle of women friends, who had embarked on co-parenting in good faith, only to find themselves holding the baby. In addition, as a practicing artist, I intuitively understood my chosen career path could be uncertain financially, and I wasn't prepared to subject a small person to a life of deprivation, should I too, be left holding the baby. Not long into the relationship, Alan took me to Glasgow to meet his parents. His mother didn't pull any punches. She made it plain that she was dirty on the foundation for taking her son away because she wanted grandchildren. I smiled inwardly, but now was not the time to raise her hopes by sharing what Alan and I were considering. On reflection. The Inverness Spinners and Weavers. I was determined to join this group of like-minded women. Since my arrival at the foundation, I'd noticed that many members were consumed by the internal machinations of community life, to the exclusion of all else. I wanted to avoid this, and hoped that regular contact with these women, who shared my passion for textiles, would keep me connected to the world beyond the foundation. Orientees. Most of the people who completed orientation were offered membership. A number of them became my support network for the years I remained in Scotland. Together we shared the joys and trials of the foundation experience, and stayed in touch after leaving to return home, as most of us did. The official foundation no-nos. Members were not permitted to do drugs or draw the dole. Alan's parents. I enjoyed his parents, his father in particular. He was a level-headed man, and I wondered how two such normal people had produced a son like Alan. In retrospect, I realize I'd more in common with them than with their maverick son. Our relationship was unlike any other I'd had to date. So far, it was a high-energy roller coaster ride, and I was enjoying myself. Facts. The game of transformation. What is it? The game is described as a joyful way of understanding and transforming the way you play your life. It's about looking at the kinds of experiences you create, seeing how you react to them, and how you can use these insights for your own growth. As you play, you can become more aware of your personal strengths and learn important lessons that can deepen your understanding of how you operate on the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual levels.